myself, quoted the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilbertson presiding, is now in session.
Good morning and welcome to the first oral argument of our January 2015 term. Justice Curran has disqualified herself from this case, and so we brought back an old friend who hasn't really left, and that's Justice Konenkamp, and we appreciate him continuing on in his judicial service. This is the matter of the certification of Brett Jarman as a South Dakota law enforcement officer. For the appellant, Mr. Jarman, we have Mr. Timothy Wrench, an attorney from Rapid City, and for the appellee, Law Enforcement Officer Standards and Training Commission, we have Ms. Kelly Marnette, an Assistant Attorney General from Pierre. Mr. Wrench, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Well, good morning. I just want to tell you that every time I come up here, I want to thank you for that because it's an honor to argue in such a fine courtroom. This is a serious case, and this case has ramifications that are far and wide. It's about how important our jury verdicts are to our society, and it's about how important our law enforcement officers are to our society. This court, in the certification of Carlin, has noted that this good moral character ground that the Law Enforcement Standards Commission is using is nebulous and unarticulated.
Now, is that a different good moral character standard than we use for bar admissions? Because there it just has a laundry list of items.
Yeah, it is a different moral standard than bar admissions because lawyers are lawyers and there are specific rules as related to lawyers and law enforcement officers or law enforcement officers, and the powers of the commission are defined by the legislature.
Okay. So you're saying that in this case, good moral characters are a nebulous standard, not basically a checklist like we'd have for bar exams.
Correct. I wish there was a checklist, because if there was a checklist that the legislature had set forth in connection with this, or the commission had promulgated pursuant to the administrative rules, we could go down and check those and see whether or not they apply in a given circumstance. Here, we really can't do that. You look at the attorney standards, for example, says you're allowed to look at expunged conduct to determine whether or not a lawyer can be admitted to practice. There's nothing like that in connection with the law enforcement officer's standards. So you have a specific statutory authority for an attorney looking at moral character, determining whether or not an expungement or certain conduct can be used. You don't have that same thing in connection with the Law Enforcement Standards Commission. It's our position here that because of the rules which set forth and give the commission its powers, that there are certain limitations on those rules which show that acquitted conduct cannot be used to deny a certification for law enforcement. I'd refer to the court to SDCL 23A-3-42, which starts off by saying what the commission can do, and it does talk about the good moral character, education, minimum age, etc. But then it goes on to further delineate the powers of the commission by saying, notwithstanding certain statutes, any person seeking certification as a law enforcement officer, if they've received a suspended imp or a juvenile adjudication for a sex crime or a felony, their application can be refused. It would be our position here, since that's set forth in the statute, that there's a limitation on that power and that it's specifically dealing with suspended imps, juvenile adjudications, and things like that, that that shows the legislature is cognizant of this power and is placing limitations on it.
What kind of relief are you seeking?
I'm asking that the refusal to certify be reversed so there is no refusal.
So you say that the hearing is over, you don't need another hearing, he is qualified.
I'm saying that if you issue an order reversing the decision, there is no refusal to certify on his record, thus he's free to go about his business and seek certification in the future. I'm seeking the reversal of the decision of the commission to refuse to certify him based upon acquitted conduct and expunged conduct, and it's our position that that acquitted conduct and expunged conduct is beyond the purview of the rules of what the commission is allowed to look at. The reason I say that is, if really truly the commission could look at anything it wanted with good moral character, You would not need any specific rules allowing them to look at suspended impositions, allowing them to look at juvenile adjudications, or allowing them to utilize a conviction or plea when there has been a pardon and things of that nature. Because they have those specific allowances under the rules to look at those things, it shows that there is a limitation on what you can look at pursuant to good moral character. Otherwise, there'd be no reason at all for those rules, because they'd be able to look at anything they wanted on good moral character. And since those rules are there, it shows there's a limit. This good moral character is too nebulous. You can't see what it is going in. It can be used subjectively so that someone can look at a person, much like in this case, say, you know, you were acquitted by a jury of 12 people who were satisfactory to both the state and the defense, and you sought an expungement which was satisfactory to both the defense and the Attorney General's office, but we just don't think that is quite enough, and we want to do something else.
Is it just semantic that you are using expunge conduct? Isn't it a sense expunge charge or expunge conviction, not conduct? Conduct really isn't expunged. That's out there.
You can't erase. I mean, what it is what it is. But the word semantic can be used in the other way. What good is it really having an expungement if, in fact, the matter can be looked into and dealt with? And if the legislature says that if someone receives a pardon, a reprieve, a commutation, the conviction or plea can still be looked at, if the legislature says that under the administrative rules, and those are the rules that are promulgated, as you see in 2123.1, you have to ask yourself, why would that be there if they're allowed to look at anything they want under good moral conduct? Really, what you have is a law implemented in an administrative rule which says that the conviction or plea can be utilized in determining good moral character. If there's a specific administrative rule that says the conviction or plea can be utilized in determining good moral character, doesn't it stand to reason that if the legislature intended just conduct to be used in good moral character, there would be no need for that language at all? And if there is language allowing that a conviction or plea can be utilized to determine good moral character, and it's set forth in the administrative rule, doesn't it stand to reason that if the legislature wanted acquitted conduct to be included in there, that they would reach out and say, this also includes acquitted conduct? There is a difference between being charged with an offense and having it dismissed, and being acquitted of a defense or of an offense and having it expunged. And this court has noted that in connection with expungement of Oliver, and the quote I put in my brief is that, as the states points out, it is quite possible the legislature felt there was a qualitative difference in conduct resulting in charges, paren, unless acquitted, close paren, and conduct that does not result in charges being filed. There is a difference, and it is really kind of a unique thought to think that under the rules as they now stand, a person can be convicted of a misdemeanor, can be receive a suspended imposition of sentence where guilt is basically admitted, and they receive an act of judicial grace, and they can still be considered for law enforcement certification and receive law enforcement certification based upon the rules. And then you have people who are completely acquitted, completely expunged, having to go back in and basically retry what was the trial that took several days before a jury, which is before a commission, and, you know, it's before law enforcement officers. I mean, they have to kind of decide who is appropriate to come into law enforcement. It makes sense that it's before law enforcement officers, but it's also very, very hard that it's in front of law enforcement officers, because of all people, we in the court system and those who enforce the laws should be able to accept the fact that if we truly have a presumption of innocence in the state, that's just not lip service, it's just not saying it by rote to say it, and then we combine the presumption of innocence with an acquittal at trial, that we should be able to say that someone is innocent of that conduct. Then you add on top of it an expungement, and it should even be better. In this situation, when you look at the qualitative difference in the evidence, you know, if we talk about my second issue, for example, which started off clear and convincing, whether or not there was a problem with this clear and convincing evidence standard, and it turns out even though the wrong standard was applied improperly all the way through its preponderance, all of my arguments would flow towards preponderance in the same fashion. But the point I'm making is, if you take people other than law enforcement officers and have them listen to the testimony of Waleska Serafin and listen to the cross-examination of Waleska Serafin and evenly balance those contentions that she had and the things that she did versus the things that she said, you could see why a jury acquits on something like that. You will recall in this record, Waleska Serafin claims that this man violently and viciously side-thrusted her knee so it ripped out. Well, first of all, she never saw what she claims she saw. She admitted that she didn't see the kick coming. She's a first-degree black belt herself, and the first thing you learn in the first week of that is to lift your leg to block a kick. And then all of her actions thereafter are very incongruent with the claims. No 911 call, no calling out to the city workers 30 feet away. If a man can do this, he can rip a person's leg out. He's so violent that he might be able to kill somebody, yet you get in a vehicle and you drive to Casper with him. Halfway to Casper, the woman says, hey, where are we in our relationship? Are we going to continue with this relationship? And that would not be what anybody would say if a man tears the leg in half the way this is contended. They would never allow themselves to be in the same truck. And that's why it's important when you go in before the commission and you put this evidence forth and you have the law enforcement officers all voting against Jarman. And you
was
have the
there a transcript of that trial available to the commission?
No, it was not. But the cross-examination of Waleska Serafin before the commission was more damaging than the cross-examination at trial. And both sides would have been free to offer it should they wish. Actually, when I think I tried to get into the acquittal, as I recall it, there was an objection rendered before the commission. But nonetheless, the contentions of Waleska Serafin weighed by anybody who really looks at it and steps back and just tries to decide, you know, even if it's more likely than not, who is to be believed, she certainly would not carry the burden of proof. Brett Jarman comes in, sits down, tells it the way it is, and says that this all happened when he was trying to stop her from throwing and trying to stop her from grabbing a sword. And what's lost in the whole shuffle of it all, what's lost is that there is no doubt that at the outset, she is the aggressor. She's the one who's throwing the stuff around. She's in his living room damaging his property.
Well, you're making the jury argument to us now.
Well, that's what I do. That's what I do.
But that's not what we do.
Well,
we have standards of review, and you well understand the different standards of proof. And you're going to have to argue clear error here.
Well, and I am arguing clear error here. And what I was about to say was that under 2218-4, a person is justified in using force to stop damage to their property. It's applicable to a search situation such as this. And
okay,
I know
you're talking criminal law, and this isn't a criminal proceeding. There are different standards. There's different purposes in the whole proceeding.
It is different. You're right. But the point I'm trying to make is that any fair reading of those facts, if you sit down and just read the transcript, what does he say, what does she say, is going to result in him being victorious. And I'm not just saying that as an advocate. I'm saying that the things that she said and did are completely incongruent and the opposite of what someone would have done had that happened. Okay. Now, I agree that this commission has to apply something different than a jury. It can't be a jury because it's the commission. That's where we come into the statutes. That's where we look at the powers of the commission. Does the commission get to turn an acquittal into a reason to refuse someone a certification on this nebulous ground of good moral character? Maybe if the statute alone said good moral character was what needed to be found, maybe they'd be able to. But when the statute says, oh, wait a second, notwithstanding the fact that someone received a suspended imp, you can use that. You can use that to determine their eligibility. And when that's said, when there is a specific provision allowing a substitute for a criminal conviction or the facts relating to it to be used to deny a certification, it then must follow that if acquitted conduct is not addressed in the statutes, then it's not open season on that. It's not fair game. So it's our position here that when you look at the administrative rules, how felons are to be rejected, misdemeanants are to be reviewed, how there's an exception from the prohibition on employment or certification if people have been pardoned, reprieved upon proof of innocence, and things like that, that when you look at the statutory maxim, the expression of one thing is the exclusion of another. When you're expressing in the legislative intent that suspended imps can be used to deny certification, and there's not another specific statement that says acquittals can be used to deny certification, that's a big deal. That's more than just trying to make a jury argument. An acquittal is meaningful. An acquittal is something that that the jury is saying something. And now, granted, there are situations in society every day where someone gets acquitted of something and then they face a different standard of proof in a civil case, and the jury can find by a different standard of proof that something is the case. But that's when the issue is properly before the jury in that venue. It's not where it's in front of the Law Enforcement Standards Commission that's got its powers delineated by statute. They're allowed to create their administrative rules saying what they look at. And then these very statutes, which give the commission its powers, put these limitations saying that suspended imps, you can use those, juvenile adjudications, you can use those, et cetera, et cetera. If the care is taken to put those types of things in there, and if the legislature really wanted acquitted conduct to be utilized in determining the fitness for a law enforcement officer, it would have put it in there. And same is true with expungement. Expungement means something. This court has just recently handed down the Taliaferro case where you were going through the laws of the expungement and you were applying the statutes on expungement. Expungement means something. And in this case, it's our position that utilizing the acquitted conduct and the expungement by the commission was beyond the powers that the commission had. And it really resulted in an unfairness. And even if the court were to find that the commission was acting within its powers, looking at the testimony of Waleska Serafin and these specific factual things that I've taken great pains in my brief to outline so you can see what it actually is she's contending happened and what she's saying, those would militate against a finding that even by a preponderance, she is to be believed. Everything that Jarman says and brings in is rejected by the board. He brings in a fireman of 21 years who's a martial artist and talks about him being honest. He brings in a person who knows him from elementary school and talks about him being honest. He brings in letters. He brings in what he can bring in to try to show to the board that he is a person worthy of honesty. And the fact of the matter is, he had received a notice that this was a contested case, which is, in essence, is them saying, we're not going to give you the certification. We're going to have a hearing on it. And we went to the hearing, and we had to refight, relitigate what was set forth in the trial. And at the outset of the hearing, I says, you can't do this under your statutes. I pointed 23-3-42. I pointed out 212, the administrative rule. I pointed out 212.3.1, the administrative rule that talks about proof of innocence, reprieve, things like that. I've set forth the rules of statutory construction in my brief, and I just want the court to know and understand that those have not been responded to in any way by the state, and I would ask you to consider them unopposed. The legal maxim that I utilize shows that the commission went beyond the powers that it had. As to issue number two, I would ask that the court reverse the decision if it gets to issue number two. And again, the issue really is framed improperly now that we've got this new change about the preponderance issue. But all of my arguments for clear and convincing evidence as to why that was the wrong decision, they really reply to preponderance as well. In fact, in my reply brief, I put a line in there, something to the effect, this doesn't meet clear and convincing. Not only that, it doesn't meet preponderance, you know. So I would ask that be found in Mr. Jarman's favor. When I look at the third issue, I have to tell the court that on the third issue, I am just going to concede this issue. I read a statute early this morning, SDCL 1-26-D-11, which seems to be applicable in a circumstance just exactly like this, where a hearing examiner is brought in to conduct the hearing and then the board issues the opinion. But for the reasons that I've stated here, we are requesting that this court reverse the commission, wipe away this refusal to certify so that Jarman is not disabled in the future as a result of it. It sticks with the person, and it sticks with the person in law enforcement, because you have to disclose that as you move forward, and especially in front of this board. If it's not decided now, he applies again, all they're going to say is, hey, wait a second, you were the one who beat that girl up, we're not going to let you in. You were the one, and I'm going to say, well, you know, you're not supposed to consider that. And they're going to say, well, we can consider it, and then here we are right back to square one. So that's my position. Acquittal is different. Acquittal plus expungement is more different, and the presumption of innocence should be alive and well in our state. I know it's not a criminal matter, but it's something when you go through a fight like that and you get accused of something like this, and you win in front of the jury, and you get it expunged, and then you have to sit right back there and just listen to it, even as it changes right before your very eyes, and have everybody just basically call you a liar because of it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ranch. Ms. Marnette, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel? Brett Jarman was denied law enforcement certification by the commission because he failed to show good moral character. Jarman's moral character was shown through the testimony of Waleska Sheriffin. She testified that on August 16th of 2010, she was at Jarman's home in Edgemont. They had been in an on-again, off-again relationship. She became jealous when he was talking on the phone with another woman in the same room as her.
But for this issue with the person who testified, were there other reasons that the board found Jarman lacked good moral character, or is this the one and only issue?
It was based upon his actions at the time of the assault and before and after.
Okay. So this is decisive of the entire issue, this issue of her complaint against him.
It is.
Okay.
She became jealous when he was talking on the phone with another woman while she was in the room and called her babe. They began arguing. He gave her a chest bump but knocked her to the floor. When she got up, she was angry and she started throwing his property at the wall. But instead of calling law enforcement, he became angry and he executed this side thrust kick on her knee. She dropped to the ground in intense pain, believing that her knee or her leg was broken. It was obvious that she needed medical attention. Jarman himself admitted that he knew she needed an x-ray, but he didn't call for medical assistance, and he didn't immediately take her for medical care. And he didn't call 911. Why didn't he call 911? Because he had, in his own words, an extremely contentious relationship with the sheriff, and he refused to call other local law enforcement. After she was injured, Waleska attempted to grab her purse to get at her cell phone because she wanted to call for help. Jarman wouldn't let her have her phone. She ended up crawling out of the house. At that point, he finally let her have the phone. She called Jarman's son, who came over. When the son arrived, she immediately told him what had happened, that his father had kicked her. But instead of taking her to the local medical facility, which is what should have happened, Jarman decided to load her motorcycle in his truck and drive her over 170 miles to Casper, Wyoming, where she lived. He unloaded her motorcycle at her home in Casper, and she drove her vehicle to a clinic. There was a long wait, and they decided not to stay there. At that point, she tells him that when she sees a doctor, she is going to tell the doctor what happened to her. This makes him mad. He says, "Take me back to my truck." And she does, and he leaves the state. He's done. So she goes to the doctor, and she tells the doctor what happened. The doctor's mandated to call law enforcement and social services, who come. She tells the same story, to the same version of the events, to both law enforcement and social services. The injury to her knee requires reconstructive surgery. This is a very serious injury. As mentioned before, the standard of review is whether the record contains substantial evidence to support the commission's determination. The findings of fact are set aside only if clearly erroneous, and questions of law are reviewed de novo. The first issue is whether the commission could consider Jarman's actions on August 16, 2010, when Jarman kicked Waleska, refused to call law enforcement, and failed to get her immediate medical attention, in determining whether Jarman has the good moral character necessary to be a law enforcement officer. Jarman was charged with aggravated assault as a result of his actions on that date. However, he was acquitted at trial. He later applied for and received an expungement, which sealed the records of his arrest and the disposition of his criminal trial. South Dakota codified laws and the administrative rules do not prohibit conduct for which someone is charged criminally but receives an acquittal and expungement from being used to determine good moral character. Conduct does not have to be criminal in order to be considered by the commission. In viewing SDCL 23.3-42 and the administrative rules, it is clear the commission has the authority to consider the entire background of the applicant. This includes acts done as a juvenile and felony and misdemeanor convictions, and it even includes acts for which a person receives a pardon upon proving innocence. The public policy for having law enforcement officers have good moral character has been particularly evident recently as law enforcement has been put under a microscope with all of their decisions being scrutinized by the public. Law enforcement needs to have good judgment, be able to handle difficult people and situations without becoming emotional and losing self-control. Jarman has shown through his actions on August 16th of 2010 that he does not have those qualities. Mr. Wrench wants to talk about the expungement statutes, which came into effect after the administrative rules and the codified laws regarding law enforcement certification came into effect. And he wants to tell you that, well, they should have gone in and then made a rule after the expungement statutes were enacted to cover this type of situation. But if you look at the language of what an expungement does, it almost to the word mirrors what it is if you get a suspended imposition. The effect of an order of expungement is to restore the defendant or arrested person in the contemplation of the law to the status the person occupied before the person's arrest or indictment or information. No person as to whom an order of expungement has been entered shall be held thereafter under any provision of the law to be guilty of perjury or of giving a false statement by reason of the person's failure to recite or acknowledge the person's arrest, indictment, or information, or trial in response to any inquiry made of the person for any purpose. Expungement has the same effect as a suspended imp when someone has completed probation and the order is entered sealing the record. There was no reason to go back in and say that you can consider a suspended imp and then you can consider an expungement. They have the exact same effect. Our legislature and administrative rules say that you can consider the conduct underlying a suspended imposition of sentence, and you can consider the conduct that underlies the expunged charges. The second issue before this court is whether the evidence presented at the hearing established Jarman did not have the good moral character necessary to get the certificate of qualification for county sheriff to get on the ballot. Jarman failed to prove good moral character by a preponderance of evidence. At the level before the commission, obviously the wrong standard was presented. And actually, the burden was put onto the wrong party also. In preparing for argument, it appears that the burden was put on the executive secretary of the Law Enforcement Training Commission instead of Mr. Jarman, where it should have been. But that doesn't change the outcome of this case. The commission found by clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Jarman did not possess the good moral character necessary. That means he also did not prove by preponderance of the evidence that he did.
Do you agree with Mr. Wrench that here a good moral character is kind of a totality of the circumstances analysis rather than like bar admissions where it's literally a checklist?
Yes, there is no checklist. And there are some qualities that lawyers have that law enforcement should have also. But good moral character is true. It is not defined in the statute or the rules like it is for a lawyer. But if you look at the plain dictionary definition of those words, moral, concerned with right and wrong and the distinction between them. Character, the total quality of a person's behavior as revealed in his habits or thought and expression, his attitudes and interests, his actions, and his personal philosophy of life.
Is that too nebulous for a standard, as claimed by Mr. Wrench?
No. What this court can look at what is required of law enforcement. This court knows those qualities. The Law Enforcement Standards and Training Commission knows the qualities that are necessary for law enforcement, including good judgment, self-control, honesty, trustworthiness, ability to maintain composure and to perform effectively in a stressful situation, work as a team member, accept responsibility and acknowledge mistakes, and adapt to changing circumstances. Those are just a few of the qualities that are very obvious. They don't need to be written into a statute or a rule for the commission and for this court and for the public at large to understand what is needed. The public knows what is needed for law enforcement. We all know. It doesn't need to be written in a statute. It's very clear. But if you want to look at the rules, as an analogy, look at the reasons why an officer can be decertified. An officer,
well, it's kind of like, was it Potter Stewart's classic definition of obscenity? You know it when you see it.
Well,
in moral character, is that what we're left with?
In this case, when you look at the facts that were presented to the commission, it is obvious. Someone who claims that they were prior law enforcement and he's put on all his qualities, why he believes is going to be a great law enforcement officer again, but he gets in this situation with someone who he has an emotional relationship with, it becomes heated. He doesn't call law enforcement. Of all people to know that you should call law enforcement in that situation, it would be Mr. Jarman. And then he lets it escalate to becoming physical. And after it becomes physical, he doesn't call for medical assistance for her, and he doesn't call 911. That's inconsistent with it being an accident, for one thing. But even if it was an accident, his actions afterwards show that he does not possess the characteristics that we want in law enforcement. Law enforcement all the time gets to scenes, and they have people who are injured. They know that people that they need to call. Even if the person is saying, no, I don't want medical assistance, law enforcement is trained that you still call. You still bring out that ambulance and you still check on them. You don't let someone who's injured and in an emotional state necessarily make the decision. He should have made the decision. His character is shown not just by the fact that he kicked her, even if you don't believe that that happened. His character was shown by his actions leading up to it and afterwards. Going back to why, the reason that someone can be decertified, that is in the rules. And it says they can be decertified for engaging in conduct unbecoming a law enforcement officer. For purposes of these rules, conduct unbecoming a law enforcement officer means conduct contrary to professional standards that show an unfitness to discharge duties or conduct which adversely affects morale or efficiency of the force and damages public confidence.
Are you saying then that whether he was convicted or acquitted, that criminal charge didn't make any difference in front of the commission?
It didn't. It's a completely different burden of proof.
Okay.
And we don't know why the jury found him not guilty. I mean, we would only speculate as to why. But that's not binding upon this court. But what is binding on this court is, I can't say binding, I should say you must give great weight to the commission's finding of fact. And they had the opportunity to view the witnesses, they determined the credibility, and this court would have to find that they were clearly erroneous in light of all the evidence presented. Mr. Wrench wants to talk about, you know, the cross-examination of Ms. Serafin. But the commission, they made that determination after they listened to it. They listened to her explanations, of why she did things the way she did, and they found her to be credible. Although they didn't make a specific finding of fact that Mr. Jarman wasn't credible, it's obvious that they found he was not credible. They found that he had kicked her, and they believed her testimony. They looked at his actions and found that they were not consistent with his claim that this was an accident. Therefore, I would ask that you affirm the decision of the circuit court, which affirmed the decision of the commission, and continue the denial of his application.
Thank you, Ms. Marnette.
Thank you.
Mr. Ranch, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
I didn't start off the appeal here or the statement here with an argument or a statement of exactly what happened there in the day in question. Just suffice it to say, there's a difference of opinion as to what occurred at that house that day. And the record revealed that Mr. Jarman indicated that he tried to use Waleska Serafin's phone to call the authorities because his phone had died. It had been placed on the charger. When he placed the phone on the charger, she was mad and was slamming stuff around, and he said to her, "You need to go. You need to get out of here." He tried to de-escalate the situation by getting back. She was throwing stuff around in his house, and then the rest is history. He did not take her phone in some effort to stop her from communicating. In fact, he testified, "The moment I couldn't figure out how to work the phone to call anybody, I gave it back to her because I didn't want to be in a position where I was taking somebody's phone." It's almost made to sound as if he did not provide medical attention to her and didn't call an ambulance. She didn't want an ambulance called. She had her phone. She could have done it. His son came back. She decided she would rather go back to Casper, so Brett Jarman loads her motorcycle up, takes her to Casper, buys her ice on the way for her knee, and that's when she asks about whether they're going to have an additional future relationship, and he says, "No, we're not going to," and she says, "Then I'm going to tell them that you kicked me." And he takes her all the way to Casper, and he even tries to take her to a medical facility. They end up going to her house because she's still yelling at him, and he says, "I'm through with this deal. I'm through with this deal." And the fact of the matter is he does have a contentious relationship with the sheriff there. He was trying to run against him, and there's just been a long history of trouble between the two, a long history of trouble between the two. The laundry list of things that one should look at in determining good moral character, it would be nice if a person had those going into a hearing like this. It's very easy to say that it's obvious that we should know what those things are, but we don't, and that's not what's set forth in the rules. You can't come in after the fact and say, "These are all the things that we basically look at, and they didn't prove them up, even though we provided a notice of hearing that said it was our burden of proof, not theirs," and then say that the appeal should be denied because of it. The fact of the matter is this acquitted conduct can be viewed in the same fashion as the reprieved or commuted conduct. There's a specific rule allowing that be utilized in determining good moral character. Since there's not a specific rule allowing that acquitted conduct can be utilized in determining good moral character, then the commission acted beyond the scope of its authority. If the legislature wanted the commission to look at expunged conduct or acquitted conduct, it would have been very easy for them to put that in the powers of the commission, the same way that they've allowed people to look at the expunged conduct of lawyers in determining whether or not they are admitted to the practice of law. But any idea that Jarman somehow forced this lady into this vehicle and drove her back to Gillette, completely untrue. He was trying to be nice to her and help her. And if what she says is correct, remember, she testified that he had never touched her once up to that point. If what she says is correct, you look in my brief where I have these outtakes, there would be no reason in the world for her ever to get in a truck with him, because anybody who would do this to you could kill you or hurt you, yet she drove all the way to Casper. She also admitted that if what she says was true, there would be no reason for her ever in a million years to characterize what happened to her knee as a left knee accident, yet that's exactly what she did in the medical records. The problem here is that we're coming in and we're basically retrying a case, and we're using semantics to say it doesn't matter, the conviction, et cetera, or the acquittal, et cetera, doesn't matter. We're using the underlying conduct. The fact of the matter is this underlying conduct was not fair game, and it was not fairly reviewed. It was not fairly reviewed, because if you read this, you may come away with not knowing who you want to believe. You may come away with that. I would suggest that the real review of this record would show that a fair person away from the heat of the moment would have more question about what she says than what Jarman says. With all of that said, I would move that the additional information that was submitted yesterday by way of a late motion with some preliminary reports and things like that in connection with another matter, I'd move that be excluded as beyond the settled record. I'd move that it be excluded as hearsay and ask that the court not consider that.
Well, we got a couple of issues here. First off, she can't respond to your motion because her time is up. Are you referring to the your response and her motion to dismiss?
I'm referring to a response that I received yesterday on her response to my response that had a bunch of preliminary or probable cause affidavits on another matter attached to it that were injected into this record at the very end and that are not part of the settled record and that are just sheer hearsay.
Well, we'll figure out when we can salt on the case what's relevant and not.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, I thank you. I don't have anything further to say other than there's a acquittal plus expungement means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wrench. The court will be in recess until 10 o'clock, and then we have a rules hearing.